Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
There are 8,570,000 references to factory farming on the internet, and not one of those references is positive. This leads one to ask, what is all the fuss about over factory farming? Hello out there. You are tuned into the 505th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Greymouth who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Jay Cruz on the boards. Hello, Jay.
Hey.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phone. Hello, Carol.
Hi there.
And look at this. My brother Dennis is down for a visit from Montana. Hello, Dennis.
Good morning.
There you go. Folks, they tell us not to ask what goes in the sausage, but sometimes our curiosity gets the best of us. And today, our curiosity does have the best of us because we're asking what's all the fuss over this factory farming. And we've got some great guests today who are going to help us out. We have Paul Shapiro, who is the director of the Factory Farming Campaign at the Humane Society of the United States. Hello, Paul.
Good morning, Michael. How are you doing today?
Very good. Good to have you aboard. What on earth is the Factory Farming Campaign?
Well, you know, the vast majority of the 10 billion land animals who we raise for human consumption in the United States every single year are subjected to a number of abuses, many of which would warrant criminal cruelty charges if they were forced on dogs or cats.
Yeah, but what is factory farming?
Factory farming is an industrialized method of cramming lots of animals into small spaces. Many farm animals today are intensively confined on factory farms in cages, crates, or pens so small that they can barely move, while others are overcrowded in filthy, barren sheds. Typical of factory farming also are painful mutilations, which are commonly inflicted on the animals without any anesthesia.
We'll get to that a little bit later here, but I also want to introduce the Humane Society. What is the Humane Society? Is that like the SPCA? What is the Humane Society?
The Humane Society of the United States is the nation's largest animal welfare organization. We have about 9.6 million members and constituents in the country, and we are concerned about the abuse of all animals. While certainly the protection of dogs and cats is our birthright, so to speak, we're also concerned about the treatment of animals who are raised for food, and so we are waging a campaign, among many of our other campaigns, to help reduce the suffering of those animals who are raised for meat, eggs, and milk.
Okay, good. And we always ask our guests, who pays the way? Who funds you guys?
Well, most of our funding comes from individual donors. As I mentioned, we have about 9.6 million members and constituents who donate to the organization because they support the mission of the Humane Society of the United States to both celebrate the human-animal bond and to confront the cruelty that animals too often face in our society.
Okay, fair enough. Also with us today, we have Dr. Susan Watkins, who's with the Center of Excellence for Poultry Science at the University of Arkansas. Dr. Watkins, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael. How are you today?
Very good. Good to have you aboard. Tell us a little bit about the Center of Excellence for Poultry Science.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Mm-hmm. The Center of Excellence for Poultry Science is one of the few poultry science departments that are in the United States. We focus on conducting sound research to improve the environment of birds, improve the efficiency of growing birds, and we also try to provide that information to our target audiences, whether they be backyard flock producers or industry-type production personnel.
Okay, I suppose you don't call it factory farming, do you, Susan?
No, I do not.
What do you call it?
I call it commercial egg production.
Okay.
Meat production. I call it farming.
Okay, good. Let's start off with a very, very basic question, which is why on earth do we grow animals in these industrial settings that some call factory farming? You know, I spent a lot of time in my youth growing up on my grandparents' farm in Belfry, Montana, and the chickens ran free and they ate whatever they could get their little beaks on, which was bugs and grasses and grains and whatnot. And when they were ready for to be harvested, by golly, we had a chopping block and an axe, and that's how we raised our chickens. But it's not that way anymore. The farm is gone, and the chickens no longer roam free. Why do we grow them in this industrialized setting? Let's start with you, Susan. Why do we do this?
Well, if we're going to look at commercial egg production, and that would be the table eggs that we mm-hmm. enjoy, the key reasons that we raise these birds in cages is the cage provides layers with a safe environment. It is also a healthier environment because it reduces the risk of devastating diseases, and cages also reduce the stress often associated with flock interactions.
Which is to say, chickens pecking on each other, right?
That's correct. The old saying, pecking order,
mm-hmm.
did come from chickens.
Paul?
You know, there is a lot of misinformation out there regarding the production of animals. As you mentioned, Michael, many people think of Old MacDonald's farm when they think about where our food comes from. But the unfortunate reality for most farm animals is that little could be further from the truth. Most egg
I guess, hens, Paul, the saying would be Old MacDonald had a farm.
MacDonald once had a farm, yeah. And for most farm animals in our country, they now live on factory farms, and taking the egg industry as an example, the overwhelming majority of the egg-laying hens in our country today are confined in barren wire battery cages that are so small the birds are unable even to spread their wings. In fact, the industry recommendation for space allotment for these birds is that each bird receive less space on which to live than a typical sheet of paper for her entire life. So we have hundreds of millions of these egg-laying hens who are confined in these abusive cages that permit virtually no movement. Mm-hmm. The good news, though,
well,
let me
ask you this, Paul. Why do you think we did this? Do you think we did this to be mean to chickens?
Oh, no, of course not. There wasn't a sadistic impulse to overcrowd chickens. Since World War II, the trend has been toward further intensification in the poultry industry to raise larger and larger numbers of animals in smaller and smaller spaces.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at is, why is this a trend? Why are we going there?
The main reason is because of efficiency. Factory farmers recognize, for example, that chickens are cheap while cages are expensive, and so overcrowding inside of those cages has become the norm. And there has been a race to the bottom, so to speak, not only the economic bottom, but the moral bottom, and that is sacrificing animal welfare for productivity, for efficiency, really putting the economic value far above the welfare of these animals.
Well, Susan, are you doing this to be mean to chickens?
No, we're not doing it to be mean to the chickens. We've actually found that we're enhancing the life of chickens by placing them in cages.
Now, explain that for us, please. I mean, Paul mentioned the fact that these chickens are really crammed into these cages and overcrowded. And how can you say that you're enhancing their lives then?
Well, I know that, you know, Paul's referred to industry standards. I cannot speak for the industry because I don't work for the industry. But what I can talk about are the facts that are based on sound science associated with housing layers and cages. For starters, putting a bird in a cage provides that bird with a safe environment. It means that bird's going to live without fear of being maimed or consumed by predators. I don't know of anyone who raises birds in an open range, free range environment in which that bird is not continuously in fear of predators, whether it be hawks, coyotes, skunks, possums, or dogs. By placing that bird in a confined environment, you have reduced its fear factor of predators.
Are they preyed on by other chickens in those cages?
Now let me get to that. Hang on just a moment. Cages also provide a healthier environment because those birds are, one, isolated from wild birds, which can serve as a host to many devastating diseases. And cages are much more sanitary for layers because they do not have to live in their own feces.
Hey, Michael, I would like to
Just a sec. Let her finish here, and we'll come right back to you, Paul. Go ahead, Susan.
Michael. The last point that I'd like to make is cages also reduce the stress that chickens often experience in flock or group settings. Many breeds of chickens by nature are very aggressive. Even when they are provided huge space to live in, they still have an instinctive desire to establish a pecking order. By placing a small number of birds in a cage, we reduce the flock size, thus reducing the opportunity for aggressive birds to harm the more submissive birds. So by having a small number of birds in the cage, we can establish a more favorable social environment among that smaller flock.
Okay, folks, what about it out there? There are 8,570,000 references to factory farming, and none of them are favorable. Do you believe there is something wrong with factory farming? If so, we'd like to hear about it. The phone number is today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. As you know, the food chain is media that talks with you and not at you, so pick up your phone and join us today. We have a couple of people who know a lot about the subject. One is the Paul Shapiro, who's the director of Factory Farming Campaign for the Humane Society of the United States. The other is Dr. Susan Watkins, who is with the Center of Excellence for Poultry Science at the University of Arkansas. Factory farming, do you think there is something wrong there? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We will be right back, so please do stay tuned. Welcome back out there. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. Today we're talking about factory farming or industrial farming or commercial production of animals. We have with us Paul Shapiro, who's with the Humane Society of the United States and the Campaign Against Factory Farming. Is that the title of the campaign, Paul?
Yes, Michael.
Factory Farming Campaign.
The Factory Farming Campaign of the Humane Society of the United States. And I wanted to just point out, you know, Dr. Watkins had mentioned that battery cages are used to confine birds to prevent them from being preyed upon by predators, but the reality is that the overwhelming majority of cage-free egg production in this country does not even involve any outdoor access for the birds at all. In fact, most cage-free hens never go outside, but they do have many significant welfare advantages over the caged birds. For example, they're able to walk, to spread their wings, to lay their eggs in nests, and in many cases to perch and dust bathe, and all of these are important behaviors to satisfy the bird's welfare needs. More importantly, though, there are numerous animal scientists, both in our country and abroad, who oppose the use of battery cages because they recognize just how restrictive they are. For example, Dr. Bernard Rollin, who's an animal science professor at the Colorado State University, has written numerous pieces criticizing battery cages, claiming, and I quote, that virtually all aspects of hen behavior are thwarted by battery cages. Social behavior, nesting behavior, the ability to move and flap their wings, dust bathing, space requirements, and so on. And he concludes, research has confirmed what common sense already knew. Animals built to move must move. This really isn't, this is nothing more than common sense and common decency that we allow these birds the ability to move around. We take so much from these animals. The least that we owe them in return is a little bit of common decency and allowing them to have somewhat of a decent life.
Well, that's fair enough.
When they're confined in battery cages, that simply isn't possible.
Okay, let's have Dr. Susan Watkins respond to that. Susan?
Well, battery cages also provide the birds with a way to minimize their exposure to their own feces. By minimizing the birds' exposure to their own feces, they reduce the risk of some of the diseases that can occur from being exposed to their feces. The cages, again, on these free-range type houses which you're referring to, these birds that are used for commercial egg production tend to be aggressive birds, and there's a higher incidence of cannibalism in these facilities. So the cage, again, helps to minimize that cannibalism.
I'd like to point out two things about that. The first is that virtually all of the chickens who are raised for meat in our country, those who are known as broiler chickens, are raised on the floor. So unless Dr. Watkins is willing to say that people who are eating chicken are eating birds who are exposed to their feces and had higher risk of disease, there needs to be some caution comparing denigrating cage-free egg production. At the same time, with regard to cannibalism, almost all of the birds in the egg industry industry, whether caged or cage-free, are subjected to a process known as de-beaking, in which the chicks have part of their beak burned off when they're young, and the industry claims this is to prevent against cannibalism, whether in the cage or cage-free. And really, the main difference between cage and cage-free production is simply that the birds have more ability to move and more ability to satisfy many of their important behavioral needs.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones right now and talk with some people who have chicken questions. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. And we're going to go with Darlene. Are you there, Darlene?
I am.
Welcome to the food chain.
Good morning. Thanks for the show. I think more people need to become aware of the bad conditions that birds do live in. I presently keep four hens and a rooster just for my own egg supply, and they're free range when I'm available to watch over them. What my point is, everything that you're saying right now, the gentleman's comments are right on. It's true. The birds are not being respected. In a caged environment, their personalities are taken away from them. All of the things they know and love to do in life are taken away from them. They need to have more understanding and a little bit a better environment for their living in
okay,
a caged
so your,
environment.
Darlene, your chickens are running free in the backyard, right?
Correct.
Eating bugs and eating
everything.
Grass and eating everything and having a great time.
It's a wonderful time. They love it.
Yes, and yet, do you think that that kind of chicken production could be carried out in an industrial scale?
I think it has. I think it is, and I think it has.
Where else?
And I think it. I mean, in some places in the world, there are some cleaner environments for birds, and a little bit more humane environment for birds.
Where else?
Well, I don't know exactly. I'm not the specialist here. Mm-hmm. I'm just a person that knows animals. My grandmother's always had chickens.
Well,
had chicken egg farms.
Let's pitch that notion to Susan and also to Paul. Susan, is there a place in the world where you can produce chickens on an industrial scale and be humane? Or is that possible to have chickens running free on a mass?
Well, I think Darlene made some excellent points in her topic. She says, I allow my birds access to the outside when I can watch over them.
Mm-hmm.
So now if we're going to have enough birds to produce the egg requirements for not only the United States but the world, think about the land mass that will require. Think about the number of people that's now going to require in order to watch over those birds so that they are not harmed by predators.
Okay.
I do not know of any place where there is the number of eggs that, produce in that setting is going to meet, say, the demand of a city like New York or Los Angeles.
Well,
it just doesn't exist.
Okay, Paul Shapiro, is there a place in the world where chickens can be raised humanely on an industrial scale?
Well, first, let me say thank you, Darlene, for your call. I very much appreciate your support. And second, there are several countries in which battery cages are banned. Germany, Switzerland, Austria, these countries have banned battery cages. And that isn't to say that all of their birds are running around on a free range, but it is to say that those birds are enjoying a higher welfare than birds who are confined in cages. And it may be the case that we are unable to satisfy the current per capita demand for eggs and other animal products in a manner that causes no animal suffering whatsoever. But it's also the case that we can reduce these animal suffering by getting rid of some of the worst cruelties, starting with confinement practices like battery cages or like veal crates or gestation crates for mother pigs. We can get rid of some of the worst cruelties and improve these animals' lives, even if it doesn't make their lives completely cruelty-free. And anyone who's interested in learning more and seeing photos for yourself about what these confinement factories look like, you can go to humaneeating.com and check it out.
Okay, good. Darlene, do you have a quick follow-up here?
I just want to say I think that we overproduce pretty much everything on this planet when it comes to eggs or vegetables, and there's a lot of waste involved as well. And I think that if people would look at that and maybe take the bird humane side of its life more importantly than the overmass production of the product, I think that, that would be the way to go for the future. I just It just kills me. I mean, I haven't eaten veal in my whole life. I've only eaten veal one time because of the cruelty that the veal goes through. And I don't want to get on another subject here. But, you know, I'm only one person out here. But I think that there's overproduction of eggs that probably get wasted from these factory farms. And it's not just, I was mentioning, it's not just the farming of the eggs that I'm concerned about. It's after the bird's done with the production, they're only kept for a year, what cruelty they go to in after when they're sent to the soup factory. They get their wings ripped off out of the cage when they're pulled out of these cages. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. And I'm going to go on that note, and I appreciate you letting
Thank
me
you for the call, darling. We'll really there. Appreciate it.
Alrighty.
All right, bye. Folks, a few weeks ago, I was in New York City, and there I found people living in cages, stacked one on top of the other for 50 stories, and I got to thinking, aren't we raising our animals like we're raising ourselves? And what exactly is humane? So when we get back from this break, I'd like to pick that up with Paul Shapiro and Susan Watkins and ask them what exactly is a humane way to do things on an industrial scale, and is there such a thing as humane? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We will be right back after these messages, so pick up your phone and join us. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back on The Food Chain. You know, folks, many years ago, people and animals ran free upon the land. But as the noose of civilization drew ever tighter about our necks, we found ourselves living in ever tighter quarters. And now we live in cities in little tiny boxes stacked one on top of the other, clear up into the sky, and we raise our animals this pretty much the same way. And it seems like we're all stuck in this same boat together. And we look at our animals and we scratch our head at the bizarre way we're growing them, and yet pretty much we're doing the same thing to ourselves. So we're looking at this industrial way of producing food, and we're scratching our head and asking today, what's all the fuss about this factory farming? 8,570,000 links on the internet about factory farming, and none of them are favorable. And yet, what is the alternative? Those are the questions we're asking, and we're inviting you to participate. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have Paul Shapiro, who is the Director of Factory Farming Campaign for the Humane Society of the United States. And we have Dr. Susan Watkins, who is with the Center of Excellence for Poultry Science at the University of Arkansas. And right now we're going to go to the phones and there's that weird noise, and talk with Bill, who has been an inspector of chickens, both organic and conventional. Bill, welcome to The Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael.
Fire away. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Okay.
You're on the air.
All right. Fantastic. I'm really glad that I learned about this program and have heard both sides from Mr. Shapiro and Dr. Watkins. I've experienced both sides firsthand, the conventional industrial paradigm, you might say, of egg production, as well as what's considered the organic type of egg production.
Mm-hmm.
And
wait a minute.
And both of them.
Just a quick question. Do they grow organic eggs in a non-industrial way?
When we start talking about battery cages and confinement situations, there is quite a distinction between production practices that meet what we call organic standards here in this country versus the standard commercial way of producing eggs. There's a definite difference. And a couple of the things that I heard this morning regarding stress of the birds, if you walk from a commercial what we call intensively confined egg production setup to an organic one, you'll notice a different level of stress in the birds. And certainly when birds are not confined 4 or 5 to a cage, they act very differently. And I think one of our callers earlier brought up the point that they didn't seem to be like chickens when they're jammed in the cage. And it's very true. You can notice it when you go from one to the other. When birds are placed into a cage like that, there definitely is still a pecking order, and there is still cannibalism even with debeaking.
Mm-hmm.
And most producers that grow with battery cages generally try to put in as many birds as they can and expect to lose one of those birds.
Kind of like apartment owners in New York City, right?
Yeah, I reckon. But they generally you'll find when you go through these inspections looking in the cages, you'll find one a carcass or two in there, one that's been basically pounded down into a pancake. It doesn't look like a bird anymore. And
they don't do that with organic technologies?
No. With organic egg production, they're on the house floor. They're still protected. They have access to the outdoors, although chickens, as Dr. Watkins mentioned, do have fear of predators.
Mm-hmm.
So often they're looking for some kind of shelter. And in organic egg operations, they have access to the outdoors. They're free roaming on the floor of a house.
Okay, so when we see this, the term free roaming chickens, they're not out running around in nature pecking on bugs and whatnot. They're really confined to a floor, and they're free roaming on the floor then, kind of like a dance floor or something.
Yeah, that's correct. They anyone that's in the egg business in a serious way, whether they're what we call conventional or organic or free range, they have to protect the birds. You just can't let them go out into the yard.
Mm-hmm.
The predation levels are just so high.
Okay. So everybody's after chickens, and everything is after chickens.
I kid, yeah. They seem to be the favorite.
Well, let me ask you this, Bill. You've looked at both sides now. What do you think? Is there a humane way to grow chickens?
Well, there is, and it is happening. It's not just over in Switzerland and Europe. It's here. We have some large companies that produce eggs in an industrial way that are starting to look at more humane ways of treating their birds. And it's a question that needs to be asked. I think we've been following this industrial model in agriculture in general.
Mm-hmm.
That places a high level of importance on cost efficiency.
Sure, making money.
And there is a requirement for animal survival, but we're not talking about survival. We're talking about a quality of life, and perhaps a quality end product. Something that I've just seen over and over again is an impasse when we treat an animal in a poor way and expect a top quality product from that animal, whether it's an egg or meat or whatever, it just doesn't work. You have to have a healthy animal to have a healthy product for people to eat. And most of these birds that are in these confined situations are not healthy.
Okay, let's. I'm going to have Susan respond to that really quickly. Bill, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Bill, for calling in. I would like to ask Bill a question.
Just a sec here. Hold on for just a sec, Susan. Hold on for just a second. Let me put you on hold here and see if I can pick you up again. Try that.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Is that better?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Bill, I have a question for you. When you look at commercial egg production versus the organic egg production, do you see a difference in the number of eggs that those flocks produce?
Ah, in the quantity, right?
In the quantity of eggs. Do the birds that are reared in cages, do you believe that they lay fewer eggs? Hence, you know, reproduction is the first thing to go in virtually any animal when they are stressed or they're not healthy
or the conditions are unfavorable, reproduction is going to be the first thing to go. So there goes the eggs too, right? That's correct. The egg is the reproductive organ of the bird. So do you see fewer eggs per number of birds in the cage facilities versus the organic facilities?
Well, you're going to have to answer that because Bill dropped off.
Oh, well, I'm pleased to hear that.
You know, I can respond to that,
well,
actually.
Hold on until we get back from the break, and you can do that. We will be right back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back. This is The Food Chain. Boy, we had a great question from Dr. Susan Watkins. She asked Bill if Bill noticed a difference in the amount of egg production, if those chickens in confinement cages are really being stressed. The first thing that goes is their ability to reproduce or their ability to lay eggs. Bill came back with an answer. Bill, what is it?
Yes, Michael, there is a difference. And this is why we see a price differential in the marketplace for organic eggs.
What do you mean?
Well, the organically raised layers generally won't lay as long. They'll go into molt, and you won't receive as many eggs per bird over a specified amount of time. But I think it's not a matter of what Dr. Watkins is suggesting is that if the birds are really unhealthy, then they're not going to be able to reproduce well.
Right.
And we have to also take into consideration that these birds have been bred to lay eggs, and they're going to lay eggs up until the point where they're about to die. They mm-hmm. continue to lay eggs. And most birds that haven't been bred this way, some of the older breeds of layers, would never be able to survive the stresses that these birds undergo. Okay. So they're super birds, you might say, in a way, but that doesn't mean that they're necessarily healthy. It's just that they can lay eggs.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for calling back with that answer, Bill. We're going to go back to our phones and see if we can pick up Paul Shapiro and Susan Watkins. And, Paul, did you want to follow that up really quickly?
I would. Thank you so much, Michael. Mm-hmm. And, Bill, of course, thank you for your call. I very much appreciate it. There's an effort to mislead the public oftentimes by saying that only happy animals produce. But as Bill mentioned, the reality is that these birds have been selectively bred over generations to lay an astronomical number of eggs.
I have a quick question. How do you know if a chicken's happy or not?
Well, you know, it's a difficult question to answer. However, we can look at preference testing to show which type of environments birds prefer to live in. And mm-hmm. the preference tests overwhelmingly show that these birds do not want to be confined in cages where they can barely move. But they've been bred for so long to lay such an astronomical number of eggs that the research shows you could break their legs and they would continue laying eggs. In fact, Dr. Joy Mensch, an animal science professor at the University of California, Davis, has written, and I quote, "It is now generally agreed that good productivity and health are not necessarily indicators of good welfare, because productivity is often measured at the level of the unit, e.g. the number of eggs or mass or egg mass per hen house, and the individual animals may be in a comparatively poor state of welfare, even though productivity within the unit may be high. One of the reasons organic eggs are more expensive is because it does take more space. When you give these animals more space, there's more land required. And so you have fewer eggs per square foot, but not necessarily fewer eggs per bird. In fact, studies that have been conducted on behalf of the United Egg Producers, the main trade association for the egg industry, have shown that when you give birds more space than what they're typically allotted in the industry, they do in fact lay more eggs per bird. But of course, per square foot, that may not be the case, and the industry is interested in number of eggs per square foot of space that's used. And well, the same is true, in fact, in the broiler chicken industry. In fact, two researchers at the University of Arkansas admitted recently when they wrote in the newsletter Avian Advice, they were writing, they asked, quote, "Is it more profitable to grow the biggest bird and have an increased mortality due to heart attacks?" And they say, well, a large portion of growers' pay is based on the pounds of saleable meat produced. So simple calculations suggest that it is better to get the weight and ignore the mortality. These are two animal scientists from University of Arkansas admitting that it makes economic sense for factory farmers to overcrowd animals, even though it increases the mortality in these birds.
Okay, well, he's talking about the University of Arkansas. Let's go to Dr. Susan Watkins from the University of Arkansas and have her respond to that really quickly.
Well, again, I can't speak for the industry, but I do know that, and I can't speak for whoever wrote that article. Those are my colleagues. But I do know that the industry is very concerned about the well-being of whether they're meat birds or table birds, because the health and well-being of those birds is closely tied, no matter what references that you're making without providing them the actual source of that information. The health and well-being of that bird is very closely tied to its ability to reproduce or grow and thrive.
I'll say that okay. The source of the information is available at humaneeating.com and the
Yeah, read that over really slowly. We had a request that you read that website back really slowly so people can go to it, Paul.
Absolutely. The website where you can see the source for this information is humaneeating.com.
Humaneeating.com.
And the two researchers who wrote that article I was referencing are G.T. Tabler and A.M. Mendenhall.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to Margaret really quickly, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Do stay tuned. Hey, so much to do in so little time. We've got a couple of phone calls here, so we're going to go through them really quickly. Margaret, you're on.
Hi. This is so disturbing for me. I haven't eaten eggs or chicken since, 1978?
Wow.
Because I saw the video.
What video are you talking about?
Oh, the one where they show, you know, the 4 to 5 chickens in a cage. They can't spread their wings. They can't even stand up without their heads sticking out of a cage. And how long are they left in those cages? 2 years.
So you quit eating chickens and quit eating eggs?
Yes, my God.
Do you think there's no other way to do it? Do you think that's the only way they can do it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, I did have a long talk with the owner of New Leaf, and mm-hmm. he's such a wonderful friend of mine, and he's got me eating, you know, some chicken product, like eggs at, what are they, the
so free-range.
Organic free-range
okay.
things. But the debeaking, I understand that causes lifelong pain to the bird, and there's leg and foot pain from slanting floors so that the eggs roll out of the cages. And, you know, it's no importance to the farmer that these birds are having lifelong pain, and the fleas.
So you think the farmers are intentionally being cruel to the chickens? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. And I would like to know who gives these animal abusers the power to be so darn cruel. It staggers my imagination.
Okay, Margaret, we're going to have to move on, but thank you so much for the comments. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's go to Joe really quickly. Joe, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, fire away. We only have a moment or two.
Okay, something that Susan brought up earlier in the show that I feel has kind of been pushed away is how the commercial birds are safer from disease. Something that hasn't been brought up is the avian influenza over in Southeast Asia.
Right.
Has almost predominantly been in birds that are outside birds. It's been
that's the way they grow chickens over there, right?
No. There's quite a few companies in Southeast Asia that have birds in chicken houses. And those birds have not been contracting this disease. And another example of that is in 2002, the exotic Newcastle disease outbreak in birds in California. That was not in the commercial industry. That's in backyard flocks.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for bringing that up. We're running out of time. I'm going to go quickly to Susan and ask Dr. Susan Watkins, Doctor, can we raise chickens and animals humanely in an industrial setting?
Yes, we can.
Because
the facilities continue to be modernized. We continue to upgrade those facilities, providing an ideal environment for those birds.
Paul Shapiro, can we do it humanely in an industrial setting?
Well, I think that we need to take a pragmatic approach and not pretend that it's possible to eliminate all animal suffering and the mass production of animals in industrialized settings. But what is possible is to eliminate many of the most cruel and inhumane factory farming practices in our country, including the confinement of egg-laying hens in battery cages that are so small they can't even spread their wings. Ending the confinement of birds in battery cages is a good step in the right direction that would help reduce an enormous amount of suffering. And anyone who's concerned about helping prevent animal cruelty on these factory farms and getting involved in the Humane Society of the U.S. should visit humaneeating.com.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Michael Olson, this has been The Food Chain. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.